I want you to be aware that at the end of Joe's lesson, we'll stand and sing a song. And if you are here today and would like to talk to someone in this church, at that time, we'd like you to go to room 109. It's a room right across from where the tables are on the first floor of our atrium. We'll have men and women there who are leaders in our church. And you might like a question about this church or a question about the Bible, or you may have a problem and like some counsel or just someone to pray for you. If there's a way that we could serve you today, that's where we find out about the need. So please go there at the end of this lesson. Joe Beam has been here before and is well loved in this congregation. He served the Lord in a variety of capacities as minister and evangelist, but the last number of years as the director of Family Dynamics. Family Dynamics is a ministry that helps churches help marriages and help parents. Many of our parenting and marriage ministries are a direct outgrowth of the influence of Family Dynamics. And God uses Joe across the country to bless families. We're so thankful he could be here. He was a great blessing to us this weekend, and I know he's going to be a blessing to you right now. Let me tell you that the tapes from the weekend are available at our tape ministry. The tapes for all three of the lessons he has presented or will present today are also available. I think you're going to be blessed. Joe is sharing with us what it means to have mountain-moving faith.
Again, I thank the great Richland Hills Church that you would invite me to come be part of your men's retreat weekend and be part of your Super Sunday. I don't know if you traveled around the nation much or if you have been to other churches a lot. I get to go a lot of different places because I have three sermons. And you have to go a lot of places when you only have three. And you're getting all three of them today, so, you know. If you visit around the country as much as I do and visit a lot of the churches, even a lot of the men's retreats that I speak for, you would know how special this church is. You are different. God has His hand on you, and I think that's fantastic. It is just a wonderful thing to see. The spirit, the ambiance, the love, the willingness to step out on faith and grow. And to have a man like Rick, who is uniquely gifted by God. There are not many people like him in this world that God has made. And so I think it's a wonderful blend that you have each other. As we've been talking about faith, in the last hour we discovered that most of the people who were here believe that I lie. We had an illustration where I was trying to explain what faith is, and most people thought I was lying. And so I'll just go on to say that faith is believing what you cannot see. It is the evidence of things not seen. It's the substance of things hoped for. That's the King James Version, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1. And if you have faith, what we're calling mountain-moving faith, based on Matthew chapter 21, where Jesus had withered a fig tree, and when the apostles were astonished, he told them that they had faith and did not doubt. They could say to the mountain, go throw yourself into the sea and it would be done. And so many people have not seen that, that we have decided in our own hearts and minds that he must have been speaking figuratively. Well, it must be figurative because we've never seen it, rather than thinking we haven't seen it because we don't believe like he said. If we could believe the way Jesus said we should believe, if we could have that kind of faith in God, we would see the impossible regularly because God has not lost his power. His hand is not shortened that it cannot save. That's what it says over in the book of Isaiah. Now, what I want to show you in this hour, if I may, is a couple of stories, Old Testament stories, because that's what I love. We'll walk through one of them to begin with. You remember the story. It's a story about David, actually, back in the days when King Saul was the king of Israel. And if you remember your Old Testament, you remember that King Saul was different than the other Jewish males in that he was a head and shoulder taller. Now, I have read that the anthropologists say that back in that day, the average Jewish male was about 5'3". If the average Jewish male is about 5'3", let's say that King Saul maybe as tall as 6'3", which is taller than I am, but I'm taller than 5'3". And yet, by 5'3". Now, they came in this particular battle against the Philistines, and they're on this side of the valley, and the Philistines are on that side of the valley. And back what they would do in those days is get themselves all worked up by getting a battle roar. Roar! Get the adrenaline flowing. And as they both sides are yelling and screaming and getting ready to fight, a fellow walks out that has been hired by the other side who happens to be a giant. And he walked into the valley, and he starts describing this fellow, and you put it together, and you figure out that he's 9.5 feet tall. That's basically two Jewish guys. If one stands on the shoulder of the other, you know, they're about the same height. 9.5 feet tall. Now, you may have seen some very tall basketball players, have you? I mean, those guys that are like 7, 8, 12 feet tall. You've seen those fellows, right? And most of those are kind of thin. I once saw a man that was not only big in the terms of being tall, but he was big in terms of being wide. You may have seen him on the movie The Princess Bride. Have you ever seen that fellow called Andre the Giant? Love that movie, The Princess Bride. I actually got to fly on a plane with him one time. It was back in the old Atlanta Tunnel, right? A long time ago, back in the 70s. And back, it was before the Spielberg movie, so you didn't know what it meant when the floor trembled. All I knew was the floor went boom, boom. And I didn't know what it was. And I looked around, and here came a mountain walking down the terminal. It was Andre the Giant. This man was, I guess he was well over 7 feet tall, and he was that wide. And he walked down there. His hand was bigger than any ham I've ever eaten. And then he turned to our gate, and I thought, he's going to get on our plane. We ain't never leaving the ground. Just the bulk of a man. And if that man had looked at me and said, want to fight? He'd have had to catch me. Because he was a giant of a man. And he's not even as big as this guy called Goliath. It says that the head of his spear weighed 15 pounds. It doesn't have to penetrate you. Just hit you. It'll kill you. And he's wearing a breastplate that weighed 125 pounds. I figure if the Jewish guys are about 5'3", that's about what they weigh. He's wearing one of them. And he walks into the valley, and he looks up and says, let's be reasonable about this. Rather than pitching two armies against each other, I'm the champion for this side. Send the champion from your side. The two of us will fight. And whoever happens to win will be the victor. Now, if you were 5'3", looking at this guy, you would obviously turn to look on your side for the guy who's the biggest. Right? And, of course, you would look for King Saul, because he's a head and shoulder taller than the rest of them. And you look for King Saul, and guess what? He's not on the battle line. You know where he is? He's in his tent. You know what he's doing in his tent? Planning and strategizing. If we go this and go that over there, then that will work over this. Because you see, quite often, the people who should be in the battle, rather than being in the battle, are spending way too much time figuring how to go to battle. And that's kind of ridiculous, isn't it? The giant's out there saying, come here. Not through planning. We'll figure this out. We'll be there later. Let's just plot and plan. And it's amazing how often the kingdom of God has not discovered what can be done by faith, because the very people who should be leading us are the ones who are hiding in the tents, figuring out how we can do what God could have done already. And so the king then, because he's a coward, puts out a deal. Hey, one of you guys kill him. And if you do, here are three things. A fortune, tax-free, marry my daughter. Now, about this time, David shows up. He must be about 15 years old at the time. Now, if you're a 15-year-old boy and you show up and somebody yells fight, what are you going to do? They were doing the battle cry. Arr! He comes running up there. By the way, they've done this battle cry every morning and every afternoon for 40 days. Twice a day, 40 days. You can imagine what it's like now. They know they're not going down there. What are they waiting on? They want him to die. Maybe he'll slip on a rock, kill himself, you know. God, that big's got to have cholesterol. Maybe he'll have a heart attack. We'll just wait. And when David shows up with basically a care package from home, and he hears the battle cry, he runs up because he's 15 years old. He's got to see the fight. You understand this. And he runs up and sees this giant, whoa, challenging Israel. Come here. And nobody goes. Typical 15-year-old, a little brash. Hey, who's going to kill the giant? Quiet, boy. I thought somebody fought him. I told you to be quiet, boy. And he said, what would happen if somebody did kill him? Well, gets a fortune, tax-free, gets to marry the king's daughter. It'd be like when Bill Clinton was president. If we had had some crisis, he could have said, we'll give you $1 billion, tax-free. You can marry Chelsea. I guess it drawbacks to everything. But the thing here is, I'm just kidding. It's a joke. When David got to saying somebody should do something, look what happens next. His brothers got mad. Now, there's an interesting phenomenon that when somebody finally decides to act with faith or question us as to why we don't act with faith, rather than turning and attacking the enemy, we attack the person who asked the question. You ever seen that? Why didn't somebody kill this giant? And his brothers turned and chewed him out. What are you doing here, boy? You just came to see the fight. By the way, that was true. He didn't want to see the fight, but it's amazing how people can take something that's true and make it sound so bad. Besides brothers, have you ever had any trouble with your brothers? Anybody have any siblings? You ever had any trouble with your siblings? I remember, I'm 6 years younger than my older brother, and I recall when he was 14 and I was 8, he had appendicitis. They misdiagnosed it. He almost died. So he wound up in the hospital for a long time when they finally, you know, saved his life. And he came home. I remember 14 years old, he was hobbling like he was 94. I mean, they had him walk every day, and he walked like this. And so they told him he had to walk, and he walked up this little dirt road we lived on over in South Carolina, and it was a tenth of a mile. And he turned to come back. I'm 8 years old. I'm thinking, I wonder if I could chunk a rock that far. Not only could I throw a rock that far, I could throw it accurately. Hit him right on the scar. Oh, it was therapeutic. He had hobbled up that road. He ran back down it. I still have a little scar. And so David's brothers turn on him, and what they said was, you're just trying to cause trouble. You're just trying to cause the fight. I want you to hear something, my brothers and sisters. We've been talking about faith all morning. If you have not learned this yet, learn it now. The very moment you stand up and say, charge the enemy, fight with faith, do what needs to be done, you'll find some people who should be leading will be hiding in the tent because they don't know what else to do. And you'll find the others on the battlefront who, instead of fighting the giant, will fight you. Why? I don't know. Maybe their own guilt. Maybe their own fear. Maybe they're just confused about who their enemy really is. Maybe they're mad at you because you have faith that they wish they had. And as soon as you start talking about it, you must expect to be attacked by the people on your side. Because you see, anytime anybody steps out in faith, not only will you be shot at by the enemy, but by all the people on your side who aim too low. Isn't that just the way it works? David could have said, could have killed that giant, but if you're going to act that way, I'm going to the house. If you're going to act with faith, don't expect the praise of the people. If you're going to act with faith, don't go into battle only when everybody else is cheering you on. If you're going to act in faith no matter who understands. So he said, I can kill the giant. King Saul calls him in. Boy, what makes you think you can kill that giant? You're 15 years old. Well, one time I was taking care of my sheep. A lion came up, tried to get a lamb. I picked up a stick, grabbed him by the beard, and beat him to death. That's one tough kid. Another time I'm out there taking care of my sheep, a bear comes along, wants some lamb. I picked up a stick, grabbed him by the beard, beat him to death. Moral of that story is, if you're going to fight David, don't have a beard. You see, my brothers, my sisters, what he did is exactly the opposite of human nature. We can remember every bad thing that's ever happened to us. Am I true? We could be sitting at a stoplight and for no reason remember the time in the eighth grade when we sneezed and our pants fell off. I mean, it comes out of nowhere. Oh! You're embarrassed all over again like these people saw. We remember every bad thing that ever happened to us, but it's amazing how quickly we forget the wonderful things that occurred. You see, all David was doing is what we could do to make our faith stronger. How do you think you can kill a giant? Well, I remember a time when God killed a bear through me. I remember a time when God killed a lion through me. You see, if I just keep looking back to the great and powerful things God has done rather than to my failures, the things God has done rather than the things I think should have been done differently, if I just look back to see how powerful He has been, I have some idea of how powerful He will be. So forget the failures. That's what the devil wants you to look at. Forget the times it didn't work like you expected. Look at the times when God raised up a victory and say, if He could do that, He could do this. Hey, it's just a giant. And so then King Saul said, put on my armor. Now picture this. King Saul's a head and shoulders taller than the other guys. So let's say he's 6'3". David's 15, so let's say he's 4'11". This is not going to work. I mean, if he gets in this armor, he's basically a tank. He can move around inside. He says, I can't wear your armor. It's another thing. Remember this. Whenever you decide to fight in faith, the other people who are not yet fighting will say it's okay if you fight our way. You put on my armor, and you can do it. As I've gotten older, and I'm not old yet, I'm just 51. I'm getting younger and thinner every day. Remember that, younger and thinner every day. I've already learned there's another generation and another generation behind them who don't see things like I do. They think rap is music. I think it's an oxymoron. And they don't want to wear my armor. They don't want to fight the enemy my way. And one of the reasons they don't is because they're not real enamored of my generation's successes. And so they're saying, don't make us wear your armor. Don't make us do it your way. We may have a different way to do it. It's still a God way. It's just not your way. Don't put your armor on us. Just let us act in faith. So David goes into the valley. You remember the story. Stops and picks up five rocks. I love those Bible classes when people ask you questions nobody knows the answer to. Why did he pick up five rocks? When they ask questions in Bible classes like that, nobody knows the answer. I just make them up. Why did he pick up five rocks? Goliath had four brothers. Oh, so he goes down there. Goliath did have four brothers, but there was no evidence that they were present, okay? So he picks up this rock and he starts along, and I want to show you something else about faith. You know, one of the devil's biggest tools against us is our own fear. But the devil's forces can make us afraid. They can immobilize us. Have you ever been so scared you couldn't move? Really, have you ever? Many years ago, when my wife was pregnant with our first child, she wound up in a hospital because she had dehydrated. I wound up back at the preacher's house. I was a preacher then, back in the late 1800s. And I was back in the preacher's house. And that night I couldn't sleep. And I kept thinking, why can't I sleep? Why am I so nervous? And it dawned on me, it was the first time in my life I had ever spent the night alone. I had never been in a house alone in my whole life. And she was in the hospital. I was thinking, well, why would that make you scared? And I thought, well, because Alice is not here to protect you. So I left the front porch light on. You know, that's cool. And I went to sleep. At about 2 o'clock in the morning, something wakened me, and I couldn't figure out what it was to begin with, and I turned and looked out the window. French porch light was off. And the only way it could be off was if you were into my house and you turned it off. I turned and looked. I could only see the wall. There was a light on in my living room where the front door was, and there was a shadow of somebody on this wall. Couldn't see the person, just a shadow. They raised their hand. It appeared to be a gun. And so I thought, I've got to find a weapon. All I had was a pillow. I thought, I guess I could just kill myself. So now that I know, I'll say, what do you want? And it'll scare him. But you know how fear will constrict every muscle in your body, including your vocal cords? And so I screamed, what do you want? About that time, I heard my mother's voice. My mother lives 200 miles away. I heard my mother's voice say, Joe? And I thought, I'm already dead. I was so scared, I couldn't get out of the bed. I couldn't run. I couldn't do anything. It turned out it really was my mother. One of our relatives had died in South Alabama. They had left in the middle of the night, stopped by my house. I said, how'd you get in? We rang the doorbell 15 minutes. And finally, when you didn't respond, we just checked it was unlocked. We just walked right on in. And it's amazing in a spiritual sense how that if the devil's forces can scare us, either because we're afraid of the criticism of our brothers or afraid to upset our leaders who are planning in the tents or just afraid of the giant in the valley, we'll just sit and do nothing but shout. Arr! So look what this giant says to David. Let's see, I'm in 1 Samuel, I'm in chapter 17, verse 41. 1 Samuel 17:41. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was only a boy, ruddy and handsome. And he despised him. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." If a 9.5-foot tall man told you he was about to kill you, would you have a tad of nervousness? Just a little bit of anxiety? I mean, he's saying, "I'm going to kill you." But David, full of faith, answers either foolishly or faithfully. You decide which. David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin." This guy's armed to the teeth. "But I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will hand you over to me, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. Today I'll give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and the whole world will know there is a God in Israel." This tickles me to death. John says, "Going to kill you, boy." And David said, "You'll have to die for that." Foolishness or faithfulness? And then he says, "You've defied God. I'm going to have to kill you." And then he says this, "So that the whole world will know there's a God." I don't picture him pointing at the Philistines, "so that the whole world will know there's a God." In my opinion, he's jerking his thumb over his shoulder, "so the whole world will know there's a God." In other words, when my brothers finally see God work, they won't be paralyzed with fear anymore. They won't be making fun of me or talking about me behind my back, nor will they be insisting I wear the armor of Saul. When my brothers finally see the power of God, the ones who recognize it will be down here killing Philistines. So rather than argue with the brothers, I think I'll just kill a giant. Actually, it's a pretty good philosophy, don't you think? Why fuss with the people who want to strategize? Why fuss with the people that don't understand your faith? Why look down on them? Why get mad at them? Why do anything other than just say, "Okay, let me show you. I'll kill the giant." And as soon as you do, all those good people who had trouble with faith will run past you and up the other side and start killing Philistines hip and thigh. Because they've been good people all along. They didn't need a sermon. They didn't need a fuss. They didn't need anybody to make fun of them or talk down to them. All they needed was somebody to act in faith and show them what that is. Am I right? You say, "So you think God's alive and well?" Well, I know it. Let me just end by changing gears a little, but this is the way I want to illustrate this if I can. I told a story before once when I was at Richland Hills, so if you happen to remember, please allow me to tell it again. My wife and I are one day apart in age. I'm one day older than my wife. It's really neat to be one day older than your wife, because when you get a present, you know you have 24 hours. My wife and I were married for many years, 15 years, and then we divorced. We were divorced for 3. Then we remarried, and this time had been married for 13. So 15 years the first time we were married to each other, 13 years this time we'll be married to each other. If she divorces me, I'll marry her again. After we married each other the second time, we decided we wanted another child as a celebration of our second union, forgetting that celebrations are primarily fun while you have them. So here we are, 40 years old, and she's pregnant. We don't tell anybody because we're not sure she can carry the baby. It's been a long time. We go to the doctors and get all kinds of checkups and those kinds of things. And finally, they were doing a sonogram, saw something that wasn't just right. And they sent it to a specialist. And they did a sonogram. And the man said, the hormones that are feeding the baby are also feeding tumors right next to the baby. And they're growing faster than the baby. And it's going to kill your wife. So we've got to take out the tumors and take out the baby and take out everything. And that's it. It's over. And we said, well, you know, we really wanted this child. Yes, Mr. Understand, but you don't want to lose your wife. No, I don't want to lose my wife. We need a couple of weeks to pray. He said, a couple of weeks is the edge of the envelope. That's as long as we can wait. I said, that's fine. Give us 2 weeks to pray. I started calling people all across America. Would you pray? We'd really like to have this baby. Would you pray? Had people doing all kinds of prayers for us everywhere. 2 weeks later, we came back. And I'll never forget, the nurse did the sonogram and looked at it and scratched her head. She called the doctor in. He looked at the sonogram, scratched his head. Then she scratched his head. He said, this is impossible. What is that? The tumors have not grown one iota since the day you were here. The baby's growing normally. This can't be happening. The same hormones. Alice said, we knew it was going to happen. He said, young lady, you don't know medicine. She said, but I do know God. She said, we're going to have this baby. We've been praying, Lord, don't let those tumors grow till the baby's born. Had the baby. Go back to the doctor. The tumors are growing like wildfire. He said, it doesn't make any sense. The tumor shouldn't be growing now. They're growing like wildfire. Alice said, it's our fault. It's your fault. Yeah, we're dumber than dirt. What do you mean? We just prayed they wouldn't grow till the baby was born. That's what they're doing. I discovered later it was God's protecting me from having another child because this one is trying to kill us. You don't understand how tough it is to be the 51-year-old father of an 11-year-old. You say, don't do that. You can read her mind. She's thinking, he's too old to catch me. No, she's the light of our life. And I've told that story about faith and say, see, it was a giant. We prayed and God gave the victory. And people say, ah, but what if the baby had died? We would have praised the Lord. Because faith isn't commanding God. Faith is accepting God. And God decides who lives and who dies, who heals and who doesn't. But you see, if we don't act with faith, we all die too soon. And the kingdom of God dies in the hearts of men. And so if the baby had died, I would have praised God for the answer to prayer. And it wouldn't have fazed me one iota about the next thing we prayed for our lives, the life of our daughter. By the way, your children ever wonder if they're going to die? Like they get a splinter and go, ah, is it poison? I had to take her to the emergency room one time because she got an infection in her foot. And on the way down, she said, Daddy, am I going to die? And I said, honey, I can't make promises about who's going to be alive tomorrow, but I do know this. Let me tell you one more time about the way you were born. So I was just doing what David did. Let's look at all the times the Lord delivered rather than thinking about what might not go right. God's powerful. Are there any giants in the Fort Worth area? I know they are where I live. It's always sickness. As a matter of fact, I think the bigger giants are rampant immorality and the corruption of the morals and values of our youth, and even maybe some of the programming we're getting off network television that's gradually corrupting our whole system of thought as to what's holy and unholy. And you look at those things and go, it's just too big. We can't fight those things. It's just a giant. That's all it is. It's just a giant. You mess with it, it'll bellow at you. There'll be people on your own side that can tell you that you can't defeat it. And there's a God in heaven who's saying, that's big. That? Have you been to the Rockies? I made those. That's big. Have you looked at the stars? I made those. That's big. I'll tell you what's big. I'm big. Or to use it in the King James Version, Psalms 46:10. Be still and know I am God. What giant are you facing? Quit running. Quit being scared. Quit hiding. Quit fussing with each other. Face them. Whip them. And see how many other Christian people will follow and help you defeat the rest of that army. What they need is not lecturing. What they need is faith-filled examples. Right? Then do it. And support those who do. Don't fight them. Back them. Well, I'm over time, so I have to quit. I'm a platinum medallion flyer with Delta. It means I fly at least 100 planes a year. It's the highest status you can get with Delta. So we have this arrangement. If I'm not there on time, they leave without me. If we can do anything for you, maybe today you're facing some giant and you don't think you have enough faith. And what you're saying is, I want some Christian people to pray with me about the giant I face. You can go right out that door, right across over to room 109. There'll be faith-filled people there who will listen, who will understand, and who will pray with their faith added to your faith, the faith, whatever it is that's in front of you. It could be that you say, well, you know, I've never acted on my faith by being immersed into Christ. Well, we have water ready. If you want to be immersed, you come this way, and you can be immersed today. If you need prayer or help, go that way. But here's the challenge I leave with you, my brothers and sisters. Quit hiding, quit being afraid, and quit doing so much planning. Just get in the battle and kill some giants. They got to go. Right? If we can help you, make it known while we sing this song.
He is able, more than able, to accomplish what concerns me today. He is able, more than able, to handle anything that comes my way.
Go ahead and remain standing, please. Would you pass your attendance cards to the aisle at this time? Our guests can turn in the purple card or take it to the Welcome Center and receive a Bible. Remember, the summit is Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. And at the retreat, we announced that we want to start Bible studies for men. Like, we have a lot of Bible studies during the week for women. We're going to start two for men. One on Tuesday morning, 6:30 to 7:30, and one on Saturday from 7 to 8. I'm going to lead the study on Tuesday, and Dwayne Jinks' study on Saturday. It's a seven-week study that's going to start a week after the next week, a week from this Tuesday and a week from this Saturday. A seven-week study of Henry Blackaby's material, The Man God Uses. Guys, we'd love for you to come be a part of that study. Commit to 7 weeks of studying the Word with other men. Go to the registration central on either level and sign up today. I think you're going to be blessed by it. As I mentioned, all these tapes are available. not only of the retreat, but of the lessons today. And I hope you'll get to hear them over and over again and be built up. I am thrilled to share with you that Crystal Cummins, one of our teenagers who's been visiting here, has made a decision today to put on Christ in baptism. Winston Bell is going to do that just after this service is dismissed, and we invite all her friends and family to come up here on the stage and have that wonderful celebration together. In the first hour, Joe reminded us that if you put your trust in things, because things are so transient and temporary, you'll get disappointed. You've got to put your trust in something that's eternal. So I'd like us to close this service singing a song we sang earlier in the service, and maybe after the things we've heard Joe say, it'll mean even more to us as we sing it. I'd like us to sing again the song, "Some Trust in Chariots and Some Trust in Horses, but We Trust in the Name of the Lord our God." Let's sing this song together. Then I'm going to ask Tommy Gehry, come please, dismiss us with a prayer.
Some trust in chariots.
We trust in the name of the Lord our God.
Some trust in horses.
We trust in the name of the Lord our God. We trust in the name of the Lord our God. We trust in the name of the Lord our God. His love never fails. His name will always prevail. We trust in the name of the Lord our God.
Some trust in the work they do.
We trust in the name of the Lord our God.
By His grace all the work is through.
We trust in the name of the Lord our God. We trust in the name.
Wonderful Father in heaven, we trust in your holy name. Father, you are awesome. You are wonderful, powerful, all-present and loving, kind, forgiving, caring, so many more adjectives and adverbs than we could possibly ever think of, God. You are above all and glorious in all. We thank you, Father, that you are that big daddy that we all have that takes care of us in those wonderful ways that you have. Father, we had a wonderful weekend with Joe, and I ask a great blessing upon him as he returns to his home and his family, and strong protection for them, God, because I know that Satan attacks them often. He's working so hard for you. Satan has to work harder on him. And I just ask a special blessing in care and favor of them, and especially for the things that they brought us as a family here. God, be in our hearts this week and cause this lifting up that we've had to carry out to the people that we see every day. Help us to be courageous this week in opportunities and ways that we've never noticed before. Help us, God, to spread your word as you've asked us to, and to help us to use you as that power. Every place we get embarrassed, every place we forget, Cause us to remember you, God, and that you are there working in us and that you are alive and well and aware of everything that happens with us. We give you honor, Father, that you gave your only Son for us. We thank you for that grace of salvation that you've offered to us. Help us, Father, in a loving way to share that with other people this week, and help us to make that the most important thing that we do. Through his blessed name, we ask these favors. Amen.